What's up, y'all? Summer's got a different tempo. Everything's a little looser, brighter. One plan turns into another. You hear something, you stay a little longer. Next thing you know, you're somewhere you didn't plan to be. It's those in-between moments. That's where the ideas hit. Conversations stretch out, little memories sneak up on you. And sometimes, it's just about what's in your hand. That color, that chill. The new Tropical Butterfly Refresher from Starbucks. Guava and passion fruit flavors with mango pineapple flavored pearls. Yeah, that feels like summer before you even taste it. Funny how one small stop becomes the best part of the day. Start your summer rhythm with Starbucks. Try the new Tropical Butterfly Refresher from Starbucks.
2 days call for cookouts and lots of laundry. This Memorial Day at Lowe's, save $80 on a Charbroil Performance Series 4-Burner Gas Grill. Now just $199. Plus, get up to 45% off select major appliances to keep dishes, clothes, and food fresh. Having fun in the sun is easy with us in your corner. Our best lineup is here at Lowe's. Valid through 5/27. While supplies last, selection varies by location. See associate or Lowe's.com for details.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
On the night of March 3rd, 2022, Robert Josh Grossman sent Corey Richens a GIF image. Two people kissing, captioned, "Love you." She texted back, "Love you." Then she went to the kitchen and mixed her husband a cocktail. Within hours, Eric Richens was dead in their bed with five times a lethal dose of fentanyl in his blood. The only people in the house were Corey, Eric, and their three young sons. The boyfriend got a good night, "Love you," text. The husband got a Moscow mule. And that's not a crime of passion. That's not a woman who snapped under pressure. That's a woman who had a plan, a timeline, and a checklist, and she'd been working through it for months, maybe longer. Welcome to part two of our five-part definitive series on the Corey Richens case. In part one, we stripped off the mask, the $7.5 million in debt, the prenup that made death more profitable than divorce, and the financial empire that was imploding beneath her feet. Now we get to the mechanics of how she planned to kill her husband, the affair, the insurance, the drugs, and the rehearsal that almost worked. Almost. To understand the plan, you have to understand the affair. Robert Josh Grossman was a military veteran from South Carolina. He'd met Corey years earlier when he answered a help wanted ad for one of her house flipping projects out of state. They communicated on and off for years after that. In 2020, he moved across the country to Utah and began living in houses Corey was renovating. He worked as her handyman. He was paid infrequently, and what he described on the stand as lump sums, there was no written contract. He was financially dependent on her, living in her properties, eating at her table, existing within a structure that she controlled. And at some point, he became her lover. "Tell me again, can you be my contractor that I don't pay any money to and have you do everything for me while I'm married to my husband and I'm slowly poisoning him and friends?" Didn't work out for the Usher song. The lyrics were just, it was too much. You're like, it's a bit much. The text message between Corey and Grossman, displayed for the jury during the trial, painted a picture of a woman who had already left her marriage emotionally and was mapping out a future that didn't include her husband being alive. In December of 21, 3 months before Eric Richens died, Corey texted Grossman, "If I divorced right now, and asked you to marry me tomorrow, would you? She talked about collecting millions and divorce and one day marrying Grossman. She told him she really enjoyed their relationship and acknowledged the love triangle can't go on forever. She said, you don't deserve it. I don't deserve you. I can't expect you to sit around for the day the trigger gets pulled. The trigger, her word, not mine. She texted him about purchasing properties in Park City, telling him it was a huge deal because she grew up scrubbing toilets for wealthy people there and had promised herself she'd own those homes someday. She was confiding in her boyfriend about the ambition that was driving everything, ambition or delusion, depending on who's playing along at home. The spending, the debt, the fraud, and ultimately, the murder. Grossman got emotional on the stand. He wiped his eyes repeatedly. He put his head down and muttered, oh boy, as a private message just lit up the courtroom screen. The judge offered him a break. He said he loved her and believed she loved him. But he also testified that he never, not for a single moment, suspected that Eric's death was anything other than a tragedy. About 2 weeks before Eric died, Corey took Grossman to the United Mountains. They talked for hours. At some point, she asked him if he'd ever killed anyone while serving in Iraq. Then she asked how it made him feel. At the time, he thought she was emotionally exhausted and trying to shift the conversation away from herself. Looking back after her arrest, that question landed a little differently. It wasn't until Corey was in handcuffs that he contacted Eric's family through their private investigator and started re-examining everything with different eyes. He told the jury he was overwhelmed with guilt and sorrow, not for the murder, but for the affair, for being part of something he didn't understand until it was too late. The affair was one column of the plan. The other was money, and Corey had been building that column for years, with the patience of someone who thinks in timelines, not impulses. Between 2015 and 2017, prosecutors presented evidence that Corey secretly purchased at least 4 life insurance policies on Eric's life without his knowledge, totaling $1.9 million. She was listed as the beneficiary on all of them. She didn't tell Eric about any of them. A forensic document specialist who examined one of the policies, a $100,000 policy that went into effect in early 2022, testified that Eric's signature on the application was probably forged. The application also contained his incorrect Social Security number, which prosecutors argued demonstrated that Corey, not Eric, had filled it out. Then, in January 22, just 2 months before Eric's death, Corey made herself the beneficiary of yet another policy, a $2 million life insurance policy that Eric held jointly with his business partner. The insurance company flagged the charge and alerted Eric directly. He switched it back to his business partner, but the attempt tells you everything you need to know about Corey's mindset. In those final months, she was reaching for every dollar she could attach to his death. She was stacking policies like a poker player loading chips before an all-in bet, and the bet was her husband's life. In total, Eric's life was insured for about $2.2 million across multiple policies. After he died, Corey collected about $1.4 million in payouts. The rest went to a trust she didn't yet know existed. Forensic accountant Brooke Carrington testified that the insurance money didn't last long. Corey used roughly $600,000 to pay down some of her debts. She gave $25,000 to Grossman. The rest evaporated into the same financial black hole that had been swallowing everything else. The $1.4 million she collected from her husband's death couldn't even cover the debt she accumulated, trying to impress people she'd never be. So the affair was in place. The insurance policies were stacked. The debt was catastrophic and accelerating. And the prenuptial agreement meant that divorce would leave Corey with nothing, while death would leave her with everything. Or so she believed. And that was missing. All that was missing in this equation here, a weapon. And for that, Corey Richens turned to her housekeeper, Carmen Lauber. She cleaned houses for the Richens family. She also had a criminal history involving drug possession and distribution. How convenient. And in late January or early February of 22, Corey called her with what she framed as a favor. She said she had an investor who needed pain pills. Could Lauber reach out to someone? Lauber testified that she said she'd see what she could do. She bought an envelope of opiate pills from a woman she worked with and gave them to Corey in her driveway the next morning. That was the first transaction. And it wouldn't be the last. Corey told Lauber her investor wanted something stronger. Lauber texted back that she had a contact who could get fentanyl pills. Corey's response, according to Lauber's testimony, okay, go ahead and get it, not what is fentanyl, not is that safe, just go ahead and get it. Prosecutors said Corey referred to what she wanted as the Michael Jackson stuff because she knew Michael Jackson died from taking drugs and she wanted the same outcome. She didn't know the pharmacology. She didn't know the street names. She didn't know how to navigate the world of illicit drugs, but she knew she wanted something lethal. And she said so. By the way, Michael Jackson died of propofol overdose, not this. But again, the words don't matter. The modality does. When you're asking for the Michael Jackson stuff, nobody's going, oh, the stuff that gets you up on stage and moonwalks? No, the stuff that kills you in your bed. That's what she wanted, and that's what she got. Lauber bought pills from a man named Robert Krauser at a Maverick gas station in Draper, Utah. On February 11th, 2022, cell phone location data presented at trial confirmed both Lauber and Krauser's phones were near a gas station that day. Corey paid Lauber $1,000. Then before the month was over, Corey asked again, something stronger still. Lauber went back to Krauser around February 26. Cell phone records again confirmed both phones near the gas station. Corey paid another $1,000. Each transaction documented by digital breadcrumbs that neither woman bothered to hide because neither of them imagined it would matter. 10 days after the first fentanyl purchase from Krauser, Corey Richens made her husband a sandwich on Valentine's Day. After taking a bite, Eric broke out in hives. He couldn't breathe. He grabbed his son's EpiPen and used it on himself. He took Benadryl and laid down. He called two friends to tell them what happened. One of them, his business partner, Cody Wright, said Eric had fear in his voice. A quality, Wright said he'd almost never heard from the man. His friend Josh Craze said Eric was somber and very serious. Eric told them what he believed was happening. His wife was trying to poison him. Some of his friends treated the story like a scary antidote. Allie Staking, one of Corey's friends, testified the group laughed about it at the same time, thinking it was an allergic reaction. Ha ha! But Eric wasn't laughing. His family testified that Eric told him something chilling in the weeks before his death. If anything ever happened to him, he said Corey was to blame. He said it directly. He said it clearly. That is not speculation. That's not hindsight. That's a man telling his own family that his wife might do this to him and then dying exactly the way he predicted in exactly the time frame he feared. And Valentine's Day wasn't even the first attempt. Years earlier, during a family trip to Greece, Eric became violently ill after drinking something Corey gave him. He called his sister from overseas and told her he believed his wife had tried to kill him. The jury convicted Corey of attempted aggravated murder for the Valentine's Day incident. The Greece incident wasn't charged separately, but it painted the picture. Prosecutors wanted the jury to see a woman who tried, failed, recalibrated, and tried again, and again, and again, until it worked. That's the part of this case that strips away any defense of impulse or accident. Corey Richens didn't make one terrible decision in a moment of crisis. She made a series of calculated decisions over weeks and months and possibly years. She cultivated a drug connection through her housekeeper. She asked for pills, the stronger pills, then the most lethal thing available. She tried food. When that failed, she waited. She procured more. And then the night of March 3rd, 2022, she decided the Moscow Mule would be the final delivery method, or so she hoped. Prosecutor Bloodworth told the jury she learned from her mistake on Valentine's Day. This time she wouldn't give him food, she'd give him a drink. And she'd make sure the dose was so overwhelming there was no EpiPen, no hospital visit, no second chance. Five times a lethal dose. Bloodworth's words to the jury. She wanted Eric not only dead, but good and dead. As of the evening of March 3rd, winds down. The affair is at full tilt. The insurance policies are in place. The fentanyl has been purchased and repurchased. The boyfriend has sent his goodnight text. The husband has no idea that the drink in his hand is the last thing he'll ever taste. And the woman who mixed it has already done the math. She knows what the prenup says. She knows what the policies are worth. She's calculated the debt she can erase, the life she can start. She's texted, "Love you," to one man and poured a drink for another. And in her mind, those two actions are not contradictory. They're complementary. The text is about the future. The drink is about making that future possible. All that's left is the execution. And by morning, Eric Richens will be cold in his own bed. And Corey Richens will be calling 911 with a voice calibrated to sound like shock. In part three, we reconstruct that night, the Moscow Mule, the 911 call, the 3:08 a.m., and the 72 hours that followed. The hours in which Corey closed on a mansion, drilled open Eric's safe, and punched his sister in the face when she learned she'd been cut from his will. The mask doesn't just crack, it shatters. Press subscribe so you don't miss that. That is coming up next in our series. We're dropping a brand new one every single day for you here on the channel this week. Five parts breaking down the full Corey Richens story in its entirety in one place as we approach her sentencing. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. I'd love to see them there. We'll continue our conversation there as well. Until then, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Spring is sprung and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards. Save big.